This episode of Anything Ghost is brought to you by Audible, who has more than 180,000 audiobooks and spoken word audio products. Get a free 30-day trial at www.audiblepodcast.com/ghost. The 2015 Anything Ghost Leftover Halloween Candy Show, episode number 215. Welcome to Anything Ghost. My name is Lex Wall, and this is Anything Ghost. Anything Ghost is a place where people share their personal paranormal experiences and local ghost legends, and I share them to you or share them with you over the show. If you have a story you want to share in the next episode, send it to Lex at anythingghost.com or go to the website anythingghost.com, and there's a form there you can fill out to send in your story. So this is the leftover Halloween candy show, as I call it. Initially, I was going to call it Little Halloween because I was raised in an Irish Catholic kind of setting, and my mom always celebrated a little Christmas after Christmas. Whatever. But I was told nobody would get that, so I just decided to call it the Leftover Halloween Candy Show. And these will be stories that were sent in for the Halloween show but didn't make the deadline. And there were also stories that just came in as usual. But keep in mind, there will be some fiction, just like the Halloween show. There's no poems in this round. And the usual true stories and local ghost legends. And after this, we're going back to the regular format of Anything Ghost, so no more fiction. You're going to have to hold the fiction off until next year. Here's the Anything Ghost Leftover Halloween Candy Show. First story we have is from Tom in the Netherlands. Attic Ghost. All my life, I've experienced paranormal happenings around me from time to time, when I was a little boy up until now. Most of the times, I kept it to myself, but now and then I have to tell someone. I find it fascinating to listen to ghost stories and to hear how other people deal with certain situations. I'm 44 years old now, and I'm still learning to handle paranormal sightings and visions. It was only a few years ago since I found out that not everybody can see or hear things that I do. The stories vary a bit when it comes to being scary or just plain terrifying. When I was 4 or 5, we lived in a huge old house in the city of Nijmegen. My mom and dad rented the upstairs space and an attic from a very nice old lady who owned the property. She lived downstairs, but was away most of the time. My bedroom was in the attic. A narrow stairway led to the main part of the attic that was directly under the roof. From there, you could enter a little bedroom that was my bedroom. There was no central heating whatsoever, so in the winter time it was nearly freezing. My bed had many warm, thick blankets, and that made it nice and cozy. Because I was very young then, I went to bed early and played with little toys and teddy bears. One night I wasn't feeling quite well. I cried a lot, and my mom came to comfort me. After a while, she went downstairs to get something to drink. I heard her going down the steps, and then something strange happened. Because she left the door open, I could see right into the big, dark, empty part of the attic. Suddenly, a shape of light appeared, and it looked like a human being, but it was much bigger. The head was shaped into a cone, with the top part missing. It was just standing there, staring at me. I could see the eyes and mouth, but it all looked very weird. The shape wasn't constant, but it shifted a bit. It looked like it existed out of beams of bluish-white light. After a few moments, it suddenly disappeared, and everything went dark again. That weird-shaped head was something that I could not get out of my mind. When I was older, I went to a kitchen store with my mom to get some appliances. I looked at all the different knives that were there, and one caught my eye. The shape of this thing, whatever it was similar to the shape of the head that I had seen in the attic. Immediately, I got the strangest feeling. A feeling that I can't describe in any way. And now, after all these years, whenever I happen to see that strange shape, I still feel weird and uncomfortable in a way. Was that thing a person in the attic a ghost? Or was it an angel or an alien? I don't know, but it made such a huge impact on me that I still remember it to this day. Story number 2. The Ghost with Marbles. This is a story that was told to me by my grandmother when she was still alive. My grandmother was a lovely lady who I really liked. She was the mother of my mother, and she lived in the old house in the city that we lived in. She used the first floor because on the ground floor, a firm of architects used it as business. Nearly every weekend, my brother and I went to see her, and we stayed from Friday to Sunday. Sunday morning, we usually left because she went to church. We loved our sleepovers at that house, and it made us feel so safe. She would read us stories, and then we would go to the park and climb the towers. The city of Nijmegen in the Netherlands is the oldest city in our country. Many historic remains can be seen, and the large towers in this park are a few of them. My grandmother lived alone in the house because my granddad passed away a long time before I was born. The front door of her house had a stairway that led to the landing from which all rooms could be seen. When climbing the stairs, it made a particularly familiar sound due to the wooden steps being covered in thin carpet. On the side of the house where the stairs were situated, the outside was visible because there weren't any neighbors, and it was the last house of the street at the corner. One time, my grandmother woke up in the middle of the night because she heard a sound coming from outside her bedroom door. It came from the stairway. My grandmother froze. She recognized the sound of footsteps on the stairs. Whatever it was, made its way to the top, slowly but surely. Once at the top of the stairs, it made its way into her bedroom. That was when a black mass entered the room and moved toward the side of her bed where she was lying. While it was standing next to her, she could see that it looked like a person wearing a black cape and a hood. She couldn't see its face, but she could feel it staring down at her. My grandmother started to shout for it to go away and telling it she did not want it in her house. And then suddenly it disappeared into nothing. Still uncomfortable with the scary experience, she tried to gain her peace and go back to sleep. After a while, she fell asleep and woke up to something standing next to her bed. This time, it was a woman. She looked quite peaceful and stretched out her hand to my grandmother's face. When the woman opened her hand, there were a few marbles in it. She just showed them in complete silence. My grandmother never understood why she would show her marbles. After a few moments, she too vanished into the darkness of the bedroom and never returned again. The next story is from Clayu Day in Sydney, Australia. The Baby Who Turned Into a Dog. I was born in Brazil, and my family and I migrated to Australia in 1995. When I was about 17 years old, in Brazil, my family and I lived in a place called Sorocaba that was located about 100 kilometers outside the city of Sao Paulo. We were a very religious family and very connected spiritually. My young sister and I decided to visit my uncle in Sao Paulo and ended up attending an evening church service with them. My uncle insisted that we come back to his place after the service to have a bite to eat before we returned home. We had an amazing evening and forgot about the time. At about 10 p.m., my uncle dropped us off at the bus station, and we took the bus home. We lived a little far from the city, and therefore, after the bus dropped us off, we had to walk for another 40 minutes before we got home. It was around midnight, and my sister and I were walking home. Halfway through the 40-minute journey, I noticed a noise. It sounded like an old gate slowly opening. My sister and I looked to where the sound was coming from, and we saw a baby. It looked to be about 12 months old, crawling outside the gate. We stopped and acknowledged to each other that the baby must have crawled outside of the house without the parents noticing. Our first instinct, of course, was to run toward the baby and pick it up and return it to its parents. But when I bent down to pick up the baby, I noticed it had very black eyes, and I was about to pick it up, but the baby turned into a black dog right in front of our eyes. The dog looked vicious and cringed at us. My sister and I screamed and ran away as fast as we could until we got home. When we stormed into our home, our parents noticed something was very wrong. They got up and came to see to us. My sister was so afraid that she couldn't speak. She was shaking and looked very sick. I managed to explain what had happened to my parents, and they said that they believed us. The next day I returned to the house where we had seen the baby, but found that nobody lived there. I decided just to accept what had happened, and to this day my sister and I still talk about that incident. We will never forget that experience. And next up is a self-recorded story from Joe in the U.S.
This story takes place in western Pennsylvania. And it starts in Florida, outside of Bradenton, Florida. I live there with my wife and four children. And we decided I was going to go into retirement. And we wanted to move in this part of the country up in the northwestern Pennsylvania quiet area. So what I did was I ran an ad in the paper because I like to buy real estate without dealing with real estate agents when possible. So we set up our own deals usually when we do this. But I ran an ad in the paper and it said, you know, professional family looking to relocate, cash buyers of looking for a large country estate. So we didn't get too many calls, but we were up there. I flew my family up there to look at a couple pieces of property, and this gentleman called me and said, actually it was a lady, she called me and she said, I have a piece of property, I'd like, you know, if you want, we're considering selling it. I said, well, is it on the market now? And she said, no, we haven't decided to sell it. We're just thinking about it and wanting you to come look at it. So I said, okay. So it was in late summer. So my wife and four children, and we packed them up and we drove out in the country. And we came across this place, and it was beautiful. It was a big circular driveway off of the main road. And you couldn't see the house except through glimpses through the trees because it was all treed. And we pull up, and it was a classic Victorian federal style house, two-story, with three, counting the dormers up in the top. It was a very large house with a servant's quarter off to the south side of the property. So the lady came out, and she was an older lady, and she said, you know, we introduced ourselves and she brought us into the house, and the house was very clean and well preserved. It wasn't all filled with, you know, new furniture or anything. It looked like someone had lived there maybe 10 years ago and just left the place. And she started showing us around, and one of the rooms to the north of the house was a large all glass windows. It was beautiful. It would make a nice library. And she started showing us around the house, and the one weird thing was, in all the rooms, there was buckets of water, and they were all full to the brim, but there in all the rooms there were water. And she took us upstairs and showed us all the bedrooms, and she was very meticulous and took us into each room and told us about each room. And the house had these passageways all through it, where, like when you were in the main living room, outside there was like a 3-foot hallway that went around the house, and what that was passages for the servants. And I've never seen anything like that, and it was kind of neat. And then we went down in the basement, and there was a whole bar down there, and the lady said that back during Prohibition it was a speakeasy. And it was extremely interesting. The basement, all this old woodwork, and very nice. And we opened up. There was a door in the room, and she didn't say anything about the door. And I went up and opened the door, and on the other side of the door was a wall. So the door opened up into nothing, which was kind of different. So we went upstairs, and she was showing us every one of the bedrooms and opened the closet and stuff. And she showed us to all the rooms except for one bathroom. There was a big bathroom at the end of the hallway. So we got done with her presentation, and we were standing in the hallway, my wife and I and the four kids. And my children were very well behaved, and they were just standing there listening. They were young. And the lady was talking, then she got done talking, and I said, it became obvious, my wife and I discussed this later, but it became obvious that she was staying away from this one bathroom. And I said, after she got done talking, I asked her, I said, can you tell me what's wrong with the bathroom? And she said, what do you mean, what's wrong with the bathroom? I said, well, you know, you were pretty methodical in your presentation. And I said, you didn't say anything about that bathroom. She said, well, we don't like to go in there because we just don't go in there. And I said, was there a death in that room? And she said, yeah. She said there was a lady that was a working girl, and she was found dead in the bathroom. And I said, oh, that's, you know, interesting. And about that time, her husband came up to the room. And we started talking, and the husband, he was, you know, very blunt. And he came out and he said, would you have any trouble buying a piece of property that was haunted? And I said, I looked at my wife, because we weren't really into that kind of stuff. Don't know if I believed it or not. I mean, we didn't discount it, but we didn't, you know, we didn't think about it. And I said, why would you say something like this? Well, in real estate, when you sell a piece of property, you have to disclose everything about it. And if a house is haunted and you're selling it, you have to state that. You know, whether you believe it or not, you have to say it. Well, this guy was giving me prior notice that they thought the house was haunted. And he went on to tell this story about every man that ever lived in that house died a violent death. And there was a doctor that lived in it that was killed right outside the street. And then back behind the house, there was a barn. And on top of the barn, there was a racetrack, because they used to race horses and gamble. Because on top of being a speakeasy, it was also a gambling house. And that one of the owners was on a horse and died up there. So I said, well, I never thought of that. I said, it really wouldn't be something that would stop me from buying a property. But then they started showing us all these different rooms and telling us this story. Like in the basement where the speakeasy was, the daughter of the family was down there one night. She had a party with all of her girlfriends. And she said that when the kids woke up in the morning, all their shoes were missing. And when they opened that door that didn't go anywhere, they were all stacked in there. And she told other stories about, you know, hearing voices and knocking on doors. But she believed that the spirits traveled in those passageways through the walls. And so we looked around it a little bit more, and it really did. The house had a real weird feeling to it. But the fact that every man had ever died on the property, and then the stacking of the shoes, and the lady that had died in the bedroom, it was just something that, yeah, we kind of decided to pass on it. But that was a house in western Pennsylvania, and it was a beautiful home. And to this day, it's every time we drive by it, it's always still for sale.
And this is sent in from Latasha in the U.S. Apparitions in our home. A few years ago, my mother, youngest sister, and baby were living with us. One evening, my sister was working and my husband was at the studio. He was a rapper at the time, so he would be home really late. My mom and I had just gotten home from a birthday party with my baby, and my mom went to the guest room to get the baby ready for bed. I went to my room to change and wash my face, and told my mother we could see what was on TV afterwards. I had my bedroom light off with the bathroom light on, and as I was washing and drying my face, I opened my eyes and saw who I thought was my mom in her light blue nightgown in the doorway. I said, "Oh my God, Mom, you scared me." When I was finished drying my face, I called to her and she was gone. I thought it was weird and wondered what she needed. I then went to the guest bedroom and she was still in her jeans. I asked if she had come into my room to ask for something, and she said no, she was still trying to get the baby situated. We watched TV for a while and then went to bed. I was a little spooked, so I kept the light on until my husband came home. Another time, I had gotten home from work in the late afternoon. I was in the kitchen washing dishes, and I thought I saw my husband walk through the front door and pass me, heading to our bedroom. I spoke to him, looked toward the bedroom, and no one was there. A few minutes later, my husband walked into the house. I told him that I had just seen him walk in and walk past me in the kitchen to the room. He told me no, he had just gotten home from work. The last part of these stories happened to my family. My mom was living in an apartment. My oldest was spending the weekend there. She was in the living room watching TV and heard the radio in the hall bathroom turn on. She thought one of the kids woke up to use the bathroom and turned it on for whatever reason late that night. At this time, she was the only one awake. After a while, she noticed nobody turned off the radio, so she went to turn it off, but it wasn't even plugged in. She left it that way, closed the door, and went back into the living room. The next morning, she asked about it, and nobody had gotten up to use the bathroom in the middle of the night. I also noticed this at my niece's birthday party. I had gone to the bathroom and the radio was on, but I thought someone had just forgotten to turn it off. Turns out, nobody turns it on in the first place. Another time, the whole family was watching TV together in the middle of the day, and suddenly a Christmas tree ornament flew off the tree as if someone had swatted it. It landed in front of the couch where they were sitting and shattered in the middle of the living room floor. They all just looked at each other. I had gone over there one Sunday to use the computer, and my mom and sisters were at church. I was chatting with my teenage nephew, and I heard voices in the back room. I thought maybe my brother was there, or maybe my niece. So I asked my brother who was in the room. He said, "Nobody, it's just you and me here." I told him I thought I heard voices, so I went back there and didn't see anything or anyone. So this is the only piece of fiction I have for the Leftover Halloween Candy Show. And this is from Santee in San Diego, California. The date. It had been a long day at work, and I was tired. I stopped at my favorite coffee shop to get an apple and coffee. They always had a copy of the day's newspaper, and I liked to read through it, looking for sales and reading through the day's news. I was enjoying myself, and I'm sort of a hermit. I'm able to enjoy myself alone. I don't always need people around. I felt my cell phone buzzing, and I reached in my pocket and saw I had missed a call from my friend Chad. Not being in the mood to talk to Chad, I made a mental note to myself to call him the next day. A woman with long blonde hair and a blue dress came in and ordered a coffee and sat at the table next to me. She had a paperback book with her, and it was a book I recognized about a woman on a train. She looked at her book and started reading it, getting totally immersed in it. I continued reading the paper. I heard a soft voice, almost a whisper, but a soft fade of the words, "Anything interesting?" I looked around, realizing the blonde woman must be talking to me. I replied, "Not much, just candidates fighting about the election." She smiled. "I haven't seen you here before." "No, I come here a few times a month on my way home from work," I replied. She nodded. She began reading again, and stopped and looked at me. She said, "You remind me of someone I knew once. Would you be interested in doing something like going out to dinner?" I was quite surprised at her persistence and interest in me. I said, "Okay." We exchanged phone numbers, and I made arrangements to pick her up and go out for a burger the Friday coming up at 8 p.m. I didn't know what to think about going on a date with this woman. I hardly knew her, but I thought, what could it hurt? I got ready for the date on Friday and got in my car to pick up the blonde woman, whose name was Carrie. On the way, my cell phone rang and I answered it. It was Carrie. Her voice was upset. I was thinking she was going to cancel the date. "Rick, you have to come here at once. I hear a tapping sound in my basement, and I'm scared." I reassured Carrie that it was probably just a mouse or something, not to worry about it. Carrie sighed and said, "Please just hurry. I hear a laughing sound now, and I'm the only one here." I sped up and arrived at her house. She came to the door and showed me the door to the basement. "I'm too scared to go down there. Can you check it out for me?" I went to my car and got a flashlight and came back in and opened the large oak door going to the basement. I tried to turn on the light to the basement, but it was not working. Carrie looked at me and told me that it had never worked and that she had always avoided going down there. I nodded and slowly went down the old staircase going to the basement. When I got to the bottom, I heard a crash sound from somewhere in the back. I slowly walked back toward the back and called out. There was no response. I then heard a faint laugh coming from the back area from where the crashing sound had come. I told Carrie it was creepy, and I said I was coming back up. But there wasn't any response. "Carrie, are you there?" No response. I was getting kind of angry now, thinking maybe she was playing a trick on me. "Carrie, this is not funny. I'm coming up and leaving." I then heard laughter coming from upstairs, similar to the laughter I had heard by me in the basement. I hurried up the stairs, and the door slammed shut on me. It was locked. I went back down the stairs and looked for another way out, a cellar stairway or a loose window. I saw a window half opened and started going toward it. Then I heard the door open and someone walking slowly down the stairs. About now, I had no idea who it could be. I looked toward the stairs and saw a faint glow. It was a woman, and I recognized it as Carrie, but she was very pale, and I could see right through her. That was it. I ran and pried myself up and was able to shimmy out of the window out to the street. But it was dark outside. It made no sense. A man walked toward me, and I was not able to move. I could not see his face. I saw a vision in my head. It was an accident. I was in some horrible accident. The man did not speak, but said to me that I had died earlier in the day in an accident. The vision of the accident was coming back to me in a haze at that time. It all started to make sense to me. I realized that Carrie must have been a ghost that was trapped in the house, and the other voices I heard laughing must be other trapped spirits. The voice in my head from the man now said, "Follow me, Steve." We walked together into a bright light. I looked back, and I could see Carrie looking out at me through her window as we walked off into the bright light. This story is from Isabella in New York. Haunted House in Alfred, New York. My mom fell in love with a rustic house in the woods hidden on top of the hill. We had no neighbors. It was perfect for those who wanted to be secluded. I lived there with my sister and three older brothers. But the house was haunted. My first memory of a paranormal experience was when I was often scared out of the upstairs area. I would sprint down the stairs and stop in the middle, only to hear footsteps following me behind and then also stopping. I would turn my head slowly to see who had followed me, and nothing was ever there. One day, my sister was taking a bubble bath. She started to drown. My mother was awakened by hearing someone yell, "Becca!" My mother ran to the bathroom to find my little sister, Becca, in the water, choking. Another time, we had just gotten our computer fixed. It wasn't even plugged in when it turned on and started to buzz with no explanation. My family and I would often have nightmares at that home. My brother had a nightmare where he explained as pure fear. In fact, he had gotten so scared that he woke up gasping for air. When he opened his eyes, he saw a figure in the doorway of his room peeking in. One night, I myself had a nightmare. Something grabbed me and was shaking me. When I woke up, I had 3 giant scratches from my shoulder down to my waist. My little sister Sage had developed 3 imaginary friends while she lived there. One was named Mr. Shadow. He apparently lived in a pine tree for some reason. She would often tell me, "Mr. Shadow is mad at you." When we finally moved from the house, she never talked about Mr. Shadow again. Another imaginary friend was named Fluffy Boy. She described Fluffy Boy as a fuzzy little animal. But when we moved from that house, Mr. Fluffy did as well. One day, my sister was looking at a lamp. Suddenly, above the lamp's shade, a face appeared. It looked right back at her. She described the face as an exact replica of herself. She thought nothing of it. In fact, she was so young that she said hi to the face. I told her lamps should not do that. We had a barn in the back of the house. I was in there with a friend one time when a board flew across the entire room and almost shattered a window. We were so scared we ran back to the house and locked the door that night and slept on the couch. In that same barn, my brother had dared himself to sleep in there. In the middle of the night, he stood up to go to the bathroom, but was shoved back down by some supernatural force. One night in the house, I recall sitting on my bed, curled up in a ball, when I felt something sitting down next to me. I slowly looked over, and there was an imprint on my bed, as if someone was sitting down next to me. I was scared out of my wits. Looking back on that home, I have no idea how we managed to live there for 8 years. And I hope you're enjoying the Anything Ghost Leftover Halloween Candy special. And Halloween's over, except for this little celebration we're having here. But that can mean only one thing, that in the U.S. Thanksgiving's on the way, and that means it's the busiest travel day of the year. And that means a lot of people are going to be driving long distances bored out of their skulls. Don't let this be you. Get yourself some listening material to keep you company when the company you're driving with falls asleep, or you run out of conversation, whichever comes first. But here is by far the best place to find audio entertainment, Audible. Audible's the leading provider of premium digital spoken audio information and entertainment on the internet. And after going to the website, you'll understand what I mean. They have over 180,000 titles in any genre you can think of. If you want to listen to it, Audible has it. And as an Anything Ghost listener, if you sign up now, you'll get a free 30-day trial. And here's how. Go to audiblepodcast.com/ghost. Sign up and you'll get a free 30-day trial. I was just at Audible and I found a great ghost book that I would like to recommend. It's over 8 hours long, so it'll keep you busy on any long road trip. This one's called America's Most Haunted Neighborhood. And I'll read a snippet from the publisher's summary. Audible has information on the audio files there as well as the reviews from those who've listened to it. So you get a great idea of what you're going to be looking at here. On this one, America's Most Haunted Neighborhood. The most haunted neighborhood in America? That's what many are calling Old Louisville. An extensive preservation district with hundreds of old mansions and beautiful homes in Kentucky's largest city. Wherever you go in this eye-popping neighborhood, it seems that a haunted house is not far away, or a haunted church, a haunted street corner, or a haunted park. Over the last decade, so many stories of paranormal activity have surfaced that Old Louisville has gained the reputation as being one of the spookiest locations in the country. So when you go over to Audible, check it out. America's Most Haunted Neighborhood. And again, get your free 30-day trial by going to www.audiblepodcast.com/ghost. It's spelled www.audiblepodcast.com/ghost. www.audiblepodcast.com/ghost. And this is a story from Ariane in the U.S. A story about my godmother.
Hey, Lex and the Anything Goes listeners. I wanted to share another story, self-recorded story, for myself that I have. To share about my godmother, who has recently passed this year, but about 2 months ago she passed. The date was August 3rd, 2015, and her funeral was on the 7th of August. after she passed, the next 2 days after she died, I went to go see her in a casket, open casket, and when I touched her, she was, like, solid dead, like her skin was as hard as stone and cold, and I just felt this wash of fear and feeling that I thought, oh my god. Well, I was kind of saying this to God as well, that if I saw her spirit saying goodbye, it would be kind of odd, but that's what I thought. I actually, when the day after I saw her in a casket, I had a dream, and and she was standing at the edge of my bed saying goodbye, and also said that she would watch me in heaven and answer my prayers, hear my prayers, and always be with me, even when I don't see her or hear her voice. But the thing she did say was, I will always love you, and always will, in heaven, and she always loves me on earth because she was my godmother and part of the family of the Catholics wise. So that's what she said. And from that moment on, when I heard those words that she said, I sat up and I saw it, and she looked like herself, but her skin was wrinkled and she had white hair, glasses, very thin and short. She stood, it was at night, and she stood right in front of my bed, and we just made eye contact. And the only thing I did was I waved. I said hi, softly and abruptly. And then she faded, but when she faded, there was just this thin air of mist in the air. So yeah, anyways, that's my little story of her. And now it's been 2 months since her passing, and I'm still in grief, still in shock that she was gone. Well, is gone. She died at the age of 82. Very, very old lady. But the last time I saw her was at our church, St. Mary's. And before she passed, she was having a rough time getting through her life. And one of my parents' friends, Nancy, told me the story about her, and I didn't know that she passed until my mom read it in the newspaper, and that's when I was shocked. I was morally scared, and I was just very sad that she was gone. So yeah, that's my little story right there. I hope this gets in for 2:15, because I know 2:14 came out yesterday. I love the Mega Macabre. Lex, you did a really good job with it. And I heard my story about the Halloween review, and I know that it didn't get in to the song and couldn't play because it was copyrighted, so sorry about that. Anyways, yeah, so thanks again for all that you do, and I hope that I get to listen to more of your story or more of your podcast. All right, thanks. Bye.
And this story is from Mandy in Brisbane, Queensland, Australia. Shadow Man. It was a Friday morning, but it had a strange, eerie feeling. My anxiety was quite high from the moment I woke up. On the way to work, I stopped to fill the car up with fuel, and it was like everything was so quiet. Even the traffic going past the service station seemed unusually quiet. It felt like if something big or freaky had happened that day, I would not have been surprised. I felt very uneasy. The workday proceeded as normal. Nothing unusual nor eventful happened. It was a slow news day, no major disasters or tragic events. The day ended and I headed home. I live in a semi-rural area of Brisbane, Australia, which has minimal street lighting. The last 5 minutes of my trip home is a straight bit of road with roundabouts at three crossroads. It was just after dusk, and I had only one car behind me with their headlights on. They were a good distance back, but enough to light up the back window of my dual cab pickup. Driving down the dark road, looking in the rear mirror, I could see the car's lights and two headrests of my back seat. There is a significant gap between the two headrests for a third person to sit. I went through the second roundabout, and when I came out, the car behind me was just starting to go through it, so it was dark in my mirror. I have no idea why I kept looking in my rearview mirror. When the other car was back on the straight, again behind me, their headlights again shining on my back window, I looked up, and in the middle section between the two headrests, it was now blocked by a dark shadow, as though someone were sitting in the middle of the back seat. Surprisingly, it didn't scare me, and I instantly thought of shadow people. Throughout my life, I've seen many from the corner of my eye, but never one so close to be in the car with me. I kept my eye on the image for a few seconds, but the road was dark, and I had to look again toward where I was going. When I looked back into the mirror, the other car still behind me, it was clear again. The shadow was gone. This story is from Med in the UK. The Freezer and the Orphanage. When I was 19, I was at a loose end. I decided not to go to the university immediately, as I didn't know what I wanted to study. Some of my friends had a room going on the other side of the country in their student house. So I got a transfer with my job as a shop assistant at a frozen food supermarket and headed out there to live. I settled into the new job and the new town. Each day it was my job to put away the frozen stock in the walk-in freezer. Then during the day, I would replenish the shop from the delivery. I ended up spending a lot of time in that freezer. The building itself was an early 20th century garden city. The back of the house comprised of a long and wide loading bay area, which was where the freezer was. By the large delivery bay door was the doorway and long narrow staircase to the upstairs stockroom and staff room. While taking a break in the staff room, I heard the familiar sound of someone climbing the stairs. I heard the fire door open at the top of the stairs, swing, and then the door closer kick in. As the footsteps approached the staff room door, I started to say, "Hey Dave, how's it going?" I was so certain someone was there, I went out to see if they had fallen or something. After my break, I was a little unsettled. I descended the staircase, and that was when I was hit by a shocking and terrible vision of a man. He looked to be in his 50s. His face was vivid and shocking in the manner with which he stared right back at me. He had a solemn and piercing expression. Sometime later, I was working in the freezer. I was right at the back near the noisy fans. But the fans stopped suddenly. At least I thought they did. As I looked over to see why they had stopped, I saw that they hadn't stopped. Actually, the sound had somehow been sucked out of the room, which recreated a throbbing silence. I was overcome with a wave of emotion, which made my knees give out. At the same time, I clearly heard the disembodied sound of a baby crying. After a few tough seconds, the noise from the fans and the world came back into crescendo. As it rose up, I sank down, just managing to take my weight on some boxes. My eyes were streaming with tears, and I was very emotional. I looked into it a bit later. Apparently, the building was previously an orphanage, the closure of which was the subject of investigations and newspaper reports. And to be honest, once I found that much information about the building, I stopped looking into it, as it began to affect me emotionally a great deal.
Lex, this next story may take me a couple different recordings to get through it all, because I'm having some trouble with my memories these days, and I'm gonna have to talk to my wife to add some more. But feel free to cut it up, put it together however you like. Anyway, and I'm changing the location of some of these stories so that people that would ever hear this wouldn't think I was talking about them. But this story takes place in northern Indiana. My wife and I bought a house, a large house out in the country up there, and we lived in it for a couple years. And there was a house right up the street from us. It was a large federal house, the typical oblong house. This one was actually, I think, three stories. And we became friends with the family that lived there. And the lady's name was Allison, that lived in the house, and her husband was, I think his name was Alan. Anyway, we were at their house. We were invited one day. I had my own construction business, and these people were teachers. And so one holiday, I believe it was Christmas, they invited us to a get-together, a party. So we went to their house, and everybody that was there were in the teaching profession. And they were very friendly, and we were sitting and talking, and as you do in parties. And I was sitting at she had like a bar in the kitchen, and you could look out, and they had a French door out in the that opened out into the backyard. Now, this house was out in the country, no other houses around it. And I was sitting there talking to my friend who owned the property, and he had a friend there that he was talking to. And this guy got a real funny look on his face, and he was looking out the window, and he said, and my friend Al looked at him, and he said, "What's going on now?" And he said, "Well, this guy's standing out there, and he's looking inside, and he doesn't understand why all the women have dresses on, or why all the women have pants on." And I said, "What are you talking about?" And he said, "Well," he said, "if you can keep a secret, this guy," he gave me his name, he said, he's a psychic or a mystic, And he didn't want anybody to know, because this guy was a superintendent of a real nice school district in Indiana. And so people didn't know that he was into this kind of stuff. But he told me that there was a ghost outside this window, and he was looking in, and he saw these women with pants, and he was from, you know, years gone by where women didn't wear pants, and he couldn't understand why the women were all wearing pants. So I said, oh, you know, that's interesting. And I really wasn't into that kind of stuff, or I, you know, didn't think about ghosts or anything like that. So we talked a little bit more, and just, you know, and then we went home, and the party was over, and, you know, nothing else was said about it. And then about a week later, I saw my buddy, and we were talking, and he said, hey, what'd you think about so-and-so and that ghost? And I said, yeah, I don't know. I said, that's, you know, kind of different. And he said, well, let me tell you a story. And I said, okay. And he said, you know, he said, we bought this house, and he said, we didn't close on it for a while, but we were getting ready to close on it. And then after we closed on it, we couldn't take possession for like 30 days. He said that my friend was a superintendent of schools, and this gentleman was like a principal. And he said they were talking about this house that he had was all Google-eyed about and wanted to buy. He said his friend said, can I tell you something about this house? And my friend said, yeah, tell me. And he said, there's something very evil in that house. And my friend said, oh, yeah? You know, he said, I don't believe in, he told me, Joe, he said, I don't believe in any of this kind of crap. And I said, all right. And he said, this guy told him there's something very evil about the house. And and my friend said, where is this evil thing? And the guy said, it's in the basement. And my friend said, okay. And he said, can you expand on that? And he said, well, there's dead bodies buried all over that property. And my friend said, what? And he said, yeah. He said, there's graves on your property. And my friend said, there's no graveyard out here. He said, I've been all through the property. Although it's in the, you know, they own the woods and everything. He said, there was nothing there. So he just, you know, kind of blew it off. And he went home, and they closed on the property, and they moved in, and they were at the property for like a month. And my friend never said anything to his friend after that. He just let it fall. And one day he was home, and or his wife was home alone, and a knock came at the door. And this gentleman knocked. She opened the door, and there was a guy there that was very old. And she just explained him as very old. And he was doing the census, and they started talking about the census, and he started telling her about the house. And he said, my name is so-and-so, and I live up the road. He said, back, you know, in the early 1900s, there were only three houses in this whole part of the town, and your house was one of them, he said, because I helped build it. And she said, oh, well, that's interesting, you know, and helped the date the house and everything. And he said, in fact, I was the one that helped drag the gravestone up from the graveyard to build the basement for the main stone of the basement. And she said, what? She said, there's no graveyard on this property. He said, oh, yes, there is. He said, because we went back and we took the gravestone, which was the custom in this part of the country when they were building houses. They would use a gravestone, you know, as the cornerstone for the basement. And she said, I'm not aware of any graveyard. And he said, back behind the house, and he explained where this valley was, and then there was a hill on top. He said there was a graveyard there, and he said the stones aren't there because a lot of people took the stones, but he said, we took the stone from there to put your basement in. So, you know, she was flabbergasted by this, and so the guy talked some more, and then he left. And then when my friend came home, she said, you know, listen, this guy, and told him the story. So they went out and back on their property, and they had found the gravesite. There was about 16 graves back there. So my friend, this just blew him out of the water. He couldn't believe it. And his friend that said this, he'd never been out to the property. My friend didn't even own the property yet. He was in the process of closing. He hadn't closed escrow yet. So he went back to school, and he got this friend of his, and he cornered him. He said, I got to tell you. He said, you blew me out of the water with this story, and now I find out there's a gravestone that's part of my basement. He said, what else can you tell me about this house? And he said that there was something very valuable in the house, but there's also some great evil. So they got their radar up, and they started watching out for this, you know, weird stuff. Well, they had a daughter, And she would go upstairs in the third floor, where the basically like an attic room with dormers, and she would have her toys there. And she developed an imaginary friend up there. And, you know, just like you see in the movies. And this little girl would play with this imaginary friend. Well, the weird thing started happening was this girl, and the wife was a friend of my wife and I's, and her husband would tell us these stories, and it'd bring tears to their eyes, because they were like us. They weren't really into ghosts or ghost hunting or any of this crap. They just bought this beautiful house. They didn't want to be a part of this. But she talked about her daughter at the end of the day playing would put all her toys in the toy box. She had to clean everything in the room. And in the morning, she'd come out and all these toys would be back in the middle of the room. And they'd be in lines and things like that. And it started freaking her out. And then the other thing her daughter started talking about, she said that her girlfriend, her imaginary girlfriend, well, anyway, what the daughter started asking was, where am I going to live when the house burns down? And her wife said, what do you mean? And her daughter kept saying, when the house burns down, where are we going to go live? And she kept, you know, over weeks kept talking about this like it was a thing that was going to happen. Well, then her wife took the girl and set her down and said, explain to us what's going on. And she said that her friend, such and such, said that the house is going to burn down and where are we going to go live? Well, the mother went to the courthouse and to the library and started researching this house. And back in the 1800s, the house had burned down. The top of the house had burned down. The bottom of the house stayed and they rebuilt it. But when the house burned down, there was a little girl upstairs and she was killed in the fire. And this just, you know, this floored them. Because this stuff is like, no one could have possibly known this. The girl was a young, you know, 6-year-old, 7-year-old girl. She obviously didn't have any clue of what was going on. But so my friend and his wife started talking to this this superintendent of the schools or whatever, and he said that he kept saying there's something very valuable to this house and there's something very dangerous. So he said, where is this at? And this psychic said, it's in the basement. And he said, all I see is a ladder. I see a ladder. I see a ladder. So my friend goes down in the basement and he looks and there's no ladder. So the next day when he meets this guy at school, he said, there's no ladder. He said, I was down in the basement and I couldn't find anything. Where could you be a little bit more precise? And the guy said, I see lines like a ladder. So my friend goes back that night and he's standing and he's looking around. There's no ladder, but then he looks and there's like these old shelves built into this old brick wall. And the shelves look like a ladder. So he goes and he looks and he could see that the stone behind that are different. So he starts scraping it away and he pokes a hole. And in the hole, through the mortar under the blocks, you could see a room on the other side. So he doesn't do anything with it, but he shines a flashlight in it, and it's a great big room on the other side. So his wife starts doing some checking, and this house was used as the Underground Railroad during the Civil War, where they would, you know, escaped slaves would move up to the north. They'd come through this house. So it was Underground Railroad. So when he told me about this, I said, well, you know, let's open this wall up and go down and see what's on the other side. And they wouldn't have any part of it. They said, we're not opening up the door. We're just closing it. And they didn't want any part of it. So at this time, my wife and I were finished because we had built a house and we were getting ready to move. And we ended up moving and saying goodbye to our friends. But I don't know whatever happened to the house. Last time I heard, they were still living in there. But and they also never did anything with that room. So the room was still down there, you know. A psychic had said that there was something very valuable, but something very evil in there. And that's the story. Very interesting.
The next story is from Lindsay in Chicago, Illinois. The Little Orb. My parents and I went on a ghost tour while we were down in Georgetown, South Carolina. We ended up being the only people on the tour that night, but the tour guide was as friendly as ever, walking us around the town and sharing her favorite ghost stories with us. We came to the second last house on the tour, and the guide proceeded to tell us that the house once had belonged to a little girl and her mother. The little girl had been playing with a cigar box and a candle, and ended up setting the house on fire. Her mother had gotten out of the house safely, but entered the house again to grab some personal objects, and didn't make it back out before she died of smoke inhalation. The little girl had been taken to Charleston, where she lived comfortably and was adopted by another family. The strange thing, she said, was that this little girl's spirit, not her mother's, was what haunted the house, even though the little girl had not died there. Passersby have seen her near the tree where her mother had placed her on that fateful night, or playing on the balcony of the house. Through all of this being told, I was fixated on a small ball of white light that was floating back and forth on the side of the house near the balcony. It was small but very clear, and it moved in no particular pattern. Now, I assume the people of Georgetown know this ghost tour well. They know the path it takes and the stories that are told. I immediately began to look for a laser pointer or a flashlight coming from the tour guide, or a nearby house, or a child hiding in a bush playing a prank or something. I couldn't find anything. And there was no beam of light coming from any direction around me connected to that little orb. I exhausted all possible explanations. Just as the tour guide said, "Are we ready to move on?" "I'm sorry," I said, "but does anyone else see that?"
"See what?"
the tour guide said, excited to possibly add another ghost sighting to her experiences. "That ball of light on the side of the house," I said.
"I don't see anything," the tour guide said.
"I don't see it," said my father.
"I see it," my mom said, eyes wide, staring at the light on the side of the house.
We sat there while confirming with each other what direction the light was going, until we were convinced that we were both seeing the same thing. The tour guide and my father were still completely unable to see it. At this point, I could have possibly rationalized that the light was someone trying to fool with us, but the light suddenly moved from the side of the house and started hovering over the balcony. This was something I was sure couldn't have been done by a trick. It was floating in midair with nothing behind it, just playfully swirling around. I think the little girl connected with my mother and I, as we were the only ones who could see her. She perhaps missed the bond she had shared with her mother and presented herself to another pair who shared that same bond. I can only speculate. The light hovered over the balcony, dancing back and forth, until it made a complete circle and disappeared into the night. My mother and I were absolutely thrilled by this experience. And my father, not being a fan of anything supernatural, was afraid to walk back to our campsite in the dark that night. And this was sent in to me by Samantha in the U.S., and it's her friend Tracy telling his own experiences.
Hi, Lex. This is Tracy. My friend Samantha turned me on to your show, and I really got a kick out of listening to some of your stories. They're amazing, and I love your delivery. I've also had quite a few experiences, and I just wanted to share one with you that I thought you'd find interesting. I went through a pretty brutal divorce and moved into an apartment right on the ocean in San Clemente, California. And, you know, completely alone, one-bedroom apartment, awesome place. I mean, I literally had a crazy view of the ocean and really excited to be there. And after a week being there, I woke up one morning and, you know, after I moved in and had to get ready for work. So I pulled a shirt out of the closet and laid it over the ironing board, you know, normal thing I do every morning. Funny thing was I looked at the shirt and it was buttoned from top to bottom, which we're all guys, right? What do when we take off a buttoned-up shirt? We unbutton it, you know, we take it and we throw it in the laundry and we forget about it, right? Like, guys don't button shirts up. We don't do that. So, for whatever reason, I look at this shirt and it's buttoned from top to bottom. And I just kind of thought about it, like, well, I didn't do that. I know that for a fact. And I don't live with anybody, so who did that, right? And I just thought, whatever. It's one of those things you just got to dismiss or it'll drive you crazy. So I let that go. And, you know, and I did laundry again, you know, washed all my work shirts again. And 2 weeks later, I pull another shirt out of the closet, and it's buttoned from top to bottom again. And so I'm trying to, you know, figure out what the heck that was all about. And that time it really did freak me out, because I know for a fact that I remember, like, specifically taking that shirt off and throwing it in the laundry without buttoning it. And I made sure I didn't button any of my shirts. So obviously, that, you know, that was just bizarre. So some time goes by, and one night, in the middle of the night, I can hear what I thought was my ex-wife say, you know, talk to me in the middle of the night. And I wake up and there's nobody there. I get up, I walk all over the apartment, nobody's there. And so I, you know, again, just kind of dismissed it. What else do you do, right? Like, it's just one of those weird things you can't explain, but you just, you go to bed and forget about it. And a couple of weeks after that, in the middle of the night, I was sound asleep and something grabbed my leg and shook me, like, violently, like, to the point where it woke me up. And I have a cat, so the first thought I thought was, like, maybe my cat jumped on my leg or something, like, because you're trying to, you know, try to dismiss it. And I look over, my cat's laying right next to me on my pillow, like, sound asleep, not even slightly conscious. So at that point, now I realize I've got something going on. And so we have a handyman that comes around and works on the apartments. And I was talking to him. I go, so long have you been working on these apartments? He goes, oh, you know, about 15 years now. And I go, I got a question for you. Has anybody ever died in these apartments? And he goes, well, yeah, actually a guy died in your bedroom. And I'm like, well, that explains it. And I said, well, tell me a little bit about him. Well, he was in his early 50s. You know, he worked at the pizza place right down below the, you know, our apartments. And he basically died in there. And I said, well, tell me a little bit about him. You know, I don't know a lot about him. He just seemed like, you know, kind of kept himself, you know, kind of a loner. And that was enough for me. I went and got a sage and Bible and went around the whole apartment and, you know, just told him, you know, obviously you're stuck in here for whatever reason. You can't figure out how to move on and get on with the rest of, you know, your transition where you're going next. And, you know, it wasn't mean or anything. I was just trying to help the guy. And after I did that, I never had any more issues, no more issues with my shirts or being woken up or shaking or dreams or anything like wake me up in the middle of the night. All that went away. So I just thought it was an interesting story. So thank you very much.
This is a story from May in St. Louis, Missouri. Pet Ghost Returns. I was in high school when my 17-year-old cat started to become very sick. I'm one of those people who become very attached to their pets, and her ailing health was hard for me to take since I had grown up with this cat. One day my father told me that he was taking her to be euthanized, and told me to say my goodbyes. I felt so horrible, and I said my final goodbyes while crying on the ground, holding her. My father asked if I wanted to go to the vet with him, but I was in such a state that I couldn't do it. Ever since that day, remembering how close my cat Snickers was to me, I felt so much regret and shame for not going to comfort her before her death. A few months later, when I had gone back to life as usual, I had a very strange dream. In the dream, I was standing in my living room. My old nanny's mother, a kind old woman who used to give me candy as a child, showed up in the dream. This was strange due to the fact that she had passed away at least a decade ago, and I hadn't thought about her in years. The old woman walked toward me, and right beside her was my cat Snickers. The room was filled with a white blinding light, and the old woman said,
"Don't worry. She's here safe with me. It's okay."
And then the dream abruptly ended. I woke up crying and somewhat stunned that this had happened. I'm not a religious person and attributed some of this as a psychological way of dealing with my grief, my own psyche trying to console itself. But the fact that this woman was there, whom I hadn't given one thought of in many years, struck me as very strange. Fast forward another few months. I was woken up abruptly in the middle of the night by a strange feeling. It was one of those hypnagogic states where you are awake, yet sort of asleep. It was around 3 a.m., and I was in my room. It was pitch black. I glanced around in a sleepy manner. All of a sudden, I noticed a flash of movement to the right side of my bed in front of my closet, which had a small window that let in a little amount of moonlight. The flash of movement was like a black streak, one that blended in with the black of the room around me. Near the end of the streak was a kind of tail, but it went by so quickly and silently that I just barely saw it. Still, in a dreamlike state, I reached out toward the streak, which I immediately thought to be my other cat in the house, and I called out to it, "Kit Kat, hey, come here, Kiki." As I said this, I patted the bed for her to sit with me. I never once thought for a second that it wasn't my cat, and I immediately fell back to sleep. In the morning, I told my father that I thought our cat was hanging out in my room with me. As soon as I said that out loud, I realized it wasn't possible. My father told me, "No, Kit Kat was outside this morning at 7 a.m. Your door was shut when I woke up." I hadn't woken up, as most teenagers do, near noon. My door is consistently shut every single night because I am a light sleeper. The reason this was quite startling to me was the fact that my logic was gone, and without a second thought, I had reached out to this spectral entity, honestly thinking that it was my real cat. It was so real to me, in fact, that I fell back asleep comfortably, happy that my cat was in the room beside me. I still tell all my friends when discussing ghost stories that my dead cat was the only ghost I have ever seen in real life. I think both experiences were there to show me that she's still with me, despite how sad I was when she died. And the next story we have is from Leanne in Tucson, Arizona, and it's Ghost Cat. Myself and my ex-boyfriend had a cat named Buckwheat. We adopted her from a friend who could no longer take care of her. She was an adult kitty, and she was very picky about who she let bestow affection upon her. After a few weeks of adjustment, my ex and I were her new chosen ones. We were very happy with our little scrapper Buckwheat. She had had two brushes with death, but her will to live was strong and fierce. We once found her in our basement, sick as can be, lifeless, like a sack of bones and intestines, no eating, a glazed look to her, on death's doorstep. She had gotten a staph infection from a tiny scratch on her belly that no one had noticed. It grew inside her without anyone noticing until it was almost too late. Her belly actually exploded. Luckily, she was in care of a friend of mine who was a veterinarian. They cleaned the infection and sewed her up. She came home a month later and survived. What a trooper, a survivor, and a furry little hero of mine. I'm tearing up with emotion as I remember her. After this, later on, we broke up, and I moved to another state to go to grad school. My ex took care of our little fighter Buckwheat. We all remained friends, and I'd visit her when I could. Even though the years had passed, Buckwheat remembered me, which was surprising as she still hated anyone she didn't know and would hiss at them. A few more years passed, and my ex moved to another city as well. We, of course, stayed in touch, as by this time we had known each other for 15 years. He took our little Buckwheat with him. For some reason, I do not understand, he began to let her go outside and roam the neighborhood. She was happy and even befriended the neighbors, I guess becoming sweeter in her old age, and she was possibly about 10 years old now. I got an unwelcome call last week. My ex had found Buckwheat outside lying dead in the grass of the neighbor's yard. He put her in a shoebox, lit some candles, and had a little ceremony. That was Thursday. Friday night, I'm not sure if it was a dream or something, but I remember it. I was awakened in the middle of the night. I thought my two cats I have now were playing, but I opened my eyes to see the commotion, and I saw the top half of a cat, transparent. I saw ears, the neck, back, and tail sticking up, but no legs or feet. It was gliding from one door of the bedroom to the bathroom, and my alive and super friendly cat, Haley, was chasing it in a friendly, playful manner. As I remember it, I just smiled and drifted back to sleep. As it stands, I'm not sure if Buckwheat came to visit me in my waking life or in my dream, but either way, she thought she'd cause a little more havoc. Just a proper goodbye, Buckwheat style.
Hi, Lex. My name's Ellie. I'm from Melbourne, Australia. I love the show. I do have a story for you. I love a good ghost story, but I'm a sort of wanter believer. I'm a bit of a skeptic. But one thing did happen to me one night that kind of made me think. I was in year 12, which is the final year of high school here in Australia. That's what we call it. And I was finishing off an assignment. It was in the wee hours of the morning, about 2 to 3 o'clock, I reckon. And I was at the computer, which was in the kitchen of the house. It was the central part of the house. So I'm typing away, and the only other person in my house was my mum and my baby sister. And I knew at some point that night my stepdad would come home because he worked late he worked very early into the morning. but I knew at some point he would come home. So I'm typing away, I'm kind of in the zone with my essay, and my stepdad comes home and I don't turn around to talk to him because, like I said, I'm getting my assignment done. But we do have a conversation, you know, hey, how's your night? Okay, good night, no worries, that kind of thing. Pretty standard. So I continue. He goes to bed, or so I thought. But then about half an hour later, my stepdad comes home. And I hear the footsteps and I hear his voice and I turn around and I say, we just had this conversation. I just talked to you. And he said, no, I've just come home. Still to this day, I have no idea who I had that first conversation with. There was no other men in the house, but I swear I spoke with somebody, and I'm just not sure who. That's my story. Thanks for listening. Thanks, Lex.
And the last story is from Marsha in Illinois. The sea hag will take you to the basement. When our oldest son was about 5 years old, we started having strange occurrences in our house. My husband grew up in this house and never had any odd problems when he was growing up. As a matter of fact, he didn't believe in ghosts until he had this experience as a grown man. He's a very logical person and wasn't raised to talk or think about ghosts or anything paranormal. He worked the second shift at the time and would come home around midnight. Our son and I would already be upstairs asleep when my husband came home. He would spend an hour or so watching TV while he unwound after working his shift. One night he fell asleep on the couch after coming home. He had set the TV timer on so it turned off by himself, leaving him in the dark. He awoke some time later, thinking he'd go up and go to bed. As he opened his eyes, he saw an old woman standing about 5 feet away, staring at him. She was totally surrounded by fire. He rubbed his eyes, thinking he was seeing things. But after rubbing his eyes and coming wide awake, she was still standing there, surrounded by fire, looking at him. He looked at her for several seconds. It seemed like forever. And then she disappeared. Our son was in kindergarten at the time, so of course my husband didn't mention it to him. But unknown to my husband, at the same time, our son had been telling me at bedtime that he was afraid to go to sleep because an old woman would come to him after I left the room, and she would tell him she was going to take him to the basement. He said she appeared to him on many occasions, tormenting him with what she had said to him. I hadn't mentioned this to my husband because I thought it was just kind of a bad dream that our son was having. Then I had my own experience with the old woman around the same time. I hadn't said anything to my husband because I knew he didn't believe in things like this. I was in bed one night. My son was asleep in his room, and my husband wasn't home yet. I was sound asleep when suddenly something woke me up. I opened my eyes to see an old woman's face about 4 inches from my face staring at me. I quickly yanked the blankets over my head. Yes, I was that brave. I knew I needed to pull the blanket down to see if she was still there, and that I needed to go check on my son. I finally gathered the courage to look, and she was gone. I went to check in on my son and didn't see anything in there. My husband had referred to this person he saw as the sea hag when he told me his story, and that fit her. She had a wrinkly, weathered face. There were other odd things around the same time. One night, I awoke to the sound of someone digging through my son's toy box. It sounded like someone was rummaging around trying to dig something out of the bottom of the toy box without pulling the items off the top of the pile of toys. I got up to see if my son was playing around. When I got into his room, he was fast asleep, and the noise stopped when I entered his room. My aunt. When I was 15 years old, my aunt died suddenly at the age of 39 years. Her oldest son and daughter, from their first marriage, had moved out of the house that year. They were living in town on their own for the first time. There were also 2 younger children with my uncle, my dad's brother, who still lived at home with my aunt and uncle. That boy and girl were 8 and 5 years old. My aunt's death was unexpected and left everyone devastated, of course. Since I was 15 years old at the time and old enough to help, I spent the summer babysitting my younger cousins at their home while my uncle went to work each day. I'd go home when he returned from work. I'd been close to my aunt. She was always cheerful and very personable. She liked to share her talents, and she taught me to cook a few things and very patiently taught me to crochet. It was odd, but when I was in their house babysitting, I felt my aunt's presence. It was like if I had turned around quick enough, I'd see her standing there. Her presence was so real. It was as if she was there, but invisible. I assumed I felt her presence because I had been pretty close to her when she was still alive. I never mentioned it to the kids, because they were so young and certainly didn't need me telling them that their mother was in the house, but invisible. I knew it was a crazy thought, even at 15 years old. There were other odd things. My uncle remarried a few years later. I'll call her Donna. Donna brought her own children to the marriage, and they lived in the house with my uncle and cousins. Donna favored her own kids over my cousins, and apparently that didn't go over well with my late aunt. Supposedly, one evening, Donna opened the door to walk out of the bedroom, and she saw my aunt standing in the hall. That was the end of the marriage. She was terrified of my dead aunt. Years later, I married and lived down the street from my uncle's house. I walked over one evening to see them, and I was standing in the kitchen with my 2 cousins, who were in high school by then, and my uncle. My uncle was cooking dinner, and the 2 kids were sitting around the table. As we talked, we heard what sounded like a heavy dresser being dragged across a wooden floor upstairs. All 3 of them looked up at the ceiling in the next room where the sound was coming from. I assumed someone was up there, so I asked, "Who's upstairs?"
My uncle and cousins all looked at me and said, "No one. Mom is at it again. She makes noises like that all the time." They didn't seem scared at all. Unfortunately, my uncle died a couple years later before the daughter graduated from high school. When the oldest sister, who had moved out of the house, came over to help her younger siblings clear out the house, the youngest daughter and son said, after the dad's death, they stopped feeling their mother's presence in the house. They assumed Mom and Dad moved on together to the hereafter. So that's it for Halloween of 2015. Anyway, that's it for the extended Halloween. I hope you enjoyed this year's Leftover Halloween Candy episode of Anything Ghost. And again, if you have a story to share, you can either send it to lex@anythingghost.com or you can go to www.anythingghost.com and send your story from there. And always, for everything Anything Ghost, go to www.anythingghost.com. There you'll find the latest 10 episodes of Anything Ghost. And if you enjoy the show a lot and you want to hear the complete archive that goes back almost 10 years, then you can always join the VIP group. There's more information on that on anythingghost.com. And speaking of 10 years, the Anything Ghost 10-year anniversary is coming up at the end of January of 2016. Can't believe it's been 10 years, but it has been. So be expecting to hear more about what I'm going to do for the 10th anniversary coming in the next few shows. All right, thanks everybody, and don't forget about our sponsor for show number 215, audiblepodcast.com/ghost. Go there and sign up and get a free 30-day trial. Thanks everyone for all your stories for show number 215. I'll talk to you in show number 216. In the meantime, have yourself a wonderful week and take care.